On today's episode, I'm joined by Tyler Patrick, a marriage and family therapist who has dedicated his career to helping individuals and couples manage and overcome struggles with addiction and shame. He shares helpful foundational tips to those who are struggling, as well as some guidance to help spouses know what to do and what to look for in a supportive team. You're going to love his principles of recovery. As a marriage and family therapist, Tyler has dedicated his career to mastering an understanding of recovery from sexual addiction and betrayal trauma. He has come to believe that the men and women who embrace and live the principles of recovery do far more than get their lives back. They become the best kinds of husbands and wives, fathers and mothers. He feels privileged to act as a guide and support to those who embark in the life transformation of living a connected lifestyle. He's been married for over 20 years to an incredible woman and is a father to four amazing daughters. His hobbies away from work include supporting his children's interests, fly fishing, backpacking, and training River, his German short hair pointer. We hope you enjoy the show. Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast. I'm Dr. Dave here at Utah State University. Dr. Liz is not with us today. She couldn't make it with us today, but I'm super excited about our guest today. So we're going to be talking about addiction. We're going to be talking about connection and shame and resilience and understanding. He's an incredible marriage and family therapist, actually right here in good old Logan, Utah, where I'm at. This is Tyler Patrick. Hey, Tyler, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so grateful to have you.
I think there was a glitch there, but I'm really excited to be on with you. I just need to tell this up front to the listeners here. You and I have crossed paths a few times over the last several years with just different professional things. And you don't know this, but I'm kind of like a secret super fan of yours. So I'm excited to be here.
Oh man. See, the feeling is mutual, Tyler, that you mentioned that. I'm like, man, we got to get him on the podcast. We've had you on a webinar in our past. We've spoken at different things together. So I'm so looking forward to our conversation. I think you're just an expert and have so much wisdom. So I hope you don't mind this 4-hour episode that we're going to have with Tyler Patrick today. That would be awesome if we could spend 4 hours. But hey, can we back up a little bit? I'm interested actually in your journey a little bit as a marriage and family therapist, Tyler. What led you to this field, you know, originally, and why the focus on recovery from sexual addiction, on betrayal, trauma, those types of things?
That's a great question, Dave. So there's the long version and a short version. I'll tell you something a little bit in between. Yeah. So professionally speaking, I kind of got interested in helping families. I was actually serving church missions for my church in Baltimore, Maryland. And I was getting ready to come home from that. And in my very last area, we lived in an apartment complex where we made friends with about 10 or 11 little boys that lived in that apartment complex. And we'd teach them how to read and we would, you know, do things with them. And as we got to know them, found out that not a single one of them even knew who their father was. So they were with their older brothers. They were kind of running the streets, and something about that clicked with me as I was getting ready to come home going, wow, like there is something to this that families are so important. And so many of these young boys were not getting the kind of influence that they needed with a good masculine figure in their life. And then it made me start thinking about marriages and what happens in marriage. And so I decided to become a marriage and family therapist. As a result of that, and that's where I went and got school. I actually went to Utah State and got my master's degree at Utah State. The other thing that was happening at the same time was that I personally was struggling with my own addiction to pornography through all of that. So it was a secret hiding thing, this kind of like thing that I actually carried it with me all the way through a church mission, all the way into my marriage. I kept secrets for several years. We had a couple of kids. My addiction was at the worst possible place, right at the height of me getting my degree. And then I went to work for the drug courts of Southeastern Idaho doing recovery work, all the while trying to do the recovery work in secret myself until it all blew open with my wife about 4 or 5 years into our marriage. And she found out, everything kind of hit the fan. And at that point, it started to come up a little bit. And at the exact same time, my brother Brandon, who's also a therapist, he called me and said, "Hey, Tyler, we need to get into like this special niche of couples who are struggling with infidelity and pornography." He didn't know what I was going through at the time. So I jumped on board with him and said, "Let's go do that, because I can do my own recovery at the same time." And eventually this journey has actually led to what I would call a life passion. It's something that I feel like I'm called to. And through all the pain and the struggle, it's actually been quite an amazing ride that's got me doing things where I get to wake up every morning and I get to see people act with courage and I get to see people change their lives and I get to maybe be a part of that for some of them. And so that's the fast version, Dave.
Wow, Tyler, that's powerful. I didn't know that. A lot of that. Thanks for opening up and sharing that. I appreciate that. So you not only, I mean, help people, but you've lived that. You kind of walked that walk, and you can help them on their journey with a lot of some things that you can relate to them with in their own lives. It sounds like that's powerful, and it's so good to see so many more people in this space. Therapy counselors, psychologists, they're really saying, "Hey, this is a real struggle, a real problem." So, man, kudos to you for tackling this head on and helping those who are countless, right? I'm sure that you're busy. I'm sure that you're booked out because of there's such a need, isn't there, today?
Oh, it's just, unfortunately, there's no shortage of business on one hand. And on the other hand, it's like, I look at the journey that I've traveled and I know that it's a common thing that many, many couples go through. And I want people to have hope that there's a pathway through this. And not only do you go and like get back to a normal state, but when you go through a process like this, you transform yourself, you transform your life, you transform your marriage if you do it right. And it becomes worth going through instead of just some hell that you've had to live.
Mm-hmm. I love a couple of those things you just said. You mentioned the word hope, which I'm so glad that you talked about. And you talked about this, you know, worth going through it and doing it right. Because I think there's a lot of people who just feel like this is not an issue. This is a problem, you know, trying to overcome it and just keeping that secret and living in that shame, not opening up to their partner, to their spouse, maybe not doing it the quote unquote, the right way, and thinking they can tackle this on their own. And yet it's been years and years, and the setbacks and the back and forth. I think there is, you know, a right way, several paths to do it the right way. And I'm so grateful that you're in this space tackling that, because it's, yeah, so needed, as you mentioned. Now, in some of the presentations I give on personal well-being, I'll travel, I'll talk about positivity, happiness, meaning. I talk about the three needs of safety, you know, physical safety, emotional safety, feeling like I even can open up and share with others. I talk about satisfaction, doing things that bring joy and happiness in your life. And the third need is the need for connection, right? We're born this longing for belonging, this craving for connection with other people. So what happens with addiction? Can you kind of walk us through that? How do couples, I guess, move from connection to addiction, and addiction to connection? Because they're aren't they kind of seeking, they're wanting a connection, but maybe they're going about it in different ways. Can you explore that a bit with us as far as that need for connection slips into addiction and what happens there?
I love those three essentials that you're talking about, with safety and satisfaction and connection. And I think if you were to kind of put those three things on one side and then put the word addiction on the other side, you'd see that addiction actually sort of attacks all three of those simultaneously. You know, where when I start to develop an addiction, it actually makes everything else in my life less satisfactory. And that's why I have to keep going back to the same place over and over again to try to find that satisfaction or that satiation or that next high, right? And then because I feel shameful about it and I feel like, oh, it's something that's kind of controlling my life, I tend to actually pull away from all of the other things that are connecting for me. I pull away from my relationship with a higher power. I pull away from the people that are the closest to me, because I don't want them to see what I think I believe about myself, which is that I'm unworthy of their love. I'm not good enough in some way. If they knew me, they would reject me. And so they pull away from their relationship. They don't find as much satisfaction in their relationship or otherwise, because they've got this other thing that gives such a big, strong hit initially. And then, of course, the lying and the hiding and the deception just kind of pulls the rug out from underneath the relationship in terms of safety and security inside of the relationship. So there's almost like this third party now that is getting all of the attention, and the relationship sort of starts to, at best, it starts to wither on the vine. And at worst, it actually starts to cause, you know, big conflict, big disconnects. You know, I work with partners a lot who are with someone who's struggling with an addiction, and they say, before they even know there's an addiction, they'll say, I feel like I'm hitting a wall in my relationship. We can't quite get to deeper levels in terms of intimacy and connection. I feel like I don't know them the way that I want to know them. They know something's wrong. They just don't know what it is.
Yeah. And hitting that wall, I think probably some of those listeners right now are maybe like, yeah, either, you know, I'm married to someone who's really struggling through that. And therefore the spouse or partner, they're going through their own journey of feeling maybe isolated and disconnect, betrayal of trust. And where do we start? How do we get this connection back? And then the person who has that addiction, this compulsion for that sexual addiction is like, I don't know what to do. I feel helpless, and I try and I make efforts, and yet, you know, I keep slipping. Why is turning to professionals so important? Why can't couples just kind of work through this on their own? And perhaps some do, but I'm a big believer in receiving outside support. Why is that?
I think principally speaking, it might just be, obviously there's help with professionals, but it's really more about the principle. There's a few principles that have to take place in order for the healing to start and in order for that process to go on. And it starts with things like humility, which is actually knowing what my strengths are as a person, but also knowing my weaknesses, and then being willing to do something about those things. It's got principles of transparency and honesty. You know, one of the biggest things that keeps us stuck, whether it's just personally with an addiction or even inside of the relationship, there's a lot of pressure on the relationship to keep secrets. And secrets make us sick. They physically make us sick. They emotionally make us unwell. And so learning to be able to bring the things that are in the depths to the surface is its own form of liberation. And then making it a way of life, where now I did it once, that felt good, even though it was scary. Now I have to commit to living a life that lives with humility and transparency and honesty and openness. And if you hear those principles, you maybe start with a therapist or somebody who knows what you're going through and can kind of provide some guidance and some structure and some support and some empathy, because your partner might not be able to do it early on, because they're struggling with their own feelings. But learning to do those things and then making them a way of life then opens the world up to the very kinds of things we wanted in a marriage in the first place. You know, you get two people who are living that way with honesty and transparency. Now it's two people knowing who they are, offering themselves to the relationship rather than trying to get part of themselves from the other person.
Man, I love that. I just need to keep writing these things down. Secrets lead to that sickness. I've never heard that, but you're so right, because it can kind of eats us away inside. It's almost like this own little self betrayal, and I'm betraying myself. I'm betraying my partner, and yet I keep it inside, and it's like this cancer that just grows and spreads, and I want to ignore it and try to push it away. But that humility, I love that as the first principle, that honest, vulnerable, I'm stuck, I'm really struggling, and I really desperately want to change. And then you mentioned something else. It was really kind of the celebrating almost the small wins, right? Celebrating together this openness, this journey together, rather than in keeping it together, but being completely open and transparent, which has got to be difficult to do because of this cycle, right? That couples find themselves in. Are other principles, I mean, starting with humility, are there other things that you share kind of foundationally with couples on this journey?
For both partners, there's obviously some nuance to both sides when you've got someone who's been betrayed versus someone going through the addiction process. But principally speaking, there's several kind of core principles that can affect both for a good start towards healing. And I'll just give maybe four really quickly. All right. The first one is that at the core, when there's been betrayal, when there's been an addiction, it's likely that both partners are actually struggling with sort of a deflated sense of understanding who they are. And so they feel shame. Shame is this definition of something is so wrong with me that people won't love me. So the first principle is we need to get people actively engaged in a pursuit of an emotional connection with their heart or their higher power on a regular basis, so that they're understanding and cultivating a sense of self and knowing who they are. The second principle is we call them lines of defense or bottom lines, but we have to start shifting the habit loop. There's actual power to the habit loop. You know, I love the book Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, but there is something legitimate to having to rewire our brains, and it takes time and a shift in what we're doing. And so bottom lines are looking at the patterns that we're in, whether it's my own addiction cycle or my relationship cycle, and finding a couple of places where I can change or interrupt that cycle and then make it a commitment. That's what we call them bottom lines, until the habit loop changes. The third principle here is building a team. I need support, especially early on. It's hard to go to one another when I'm the one who's hurt my wife. And so if I'm struggling and now I'm trying to climb out of the hole and I did something good, but it's not good enough and she's still hurting, and I go to her and then she rejects me, just because she doesn't have the emotional space for it. I need to be able to fall into some other place where I can get that structure and that support and that perspective to say, Tyler, stay the course. Like, you're doing the right things. Give it some time. This is a process. Your wife's okay to have her own feelings. You know, that structure and that support and that accountability and empathy that comes with it is vitally important. And then the fourth principle here is I'm a big, big believer in the principles of mindfulness. I believe that mindfulness is actually right at the core. It's bedrock, foundational to increasing joy and pleasure in life, decreasing pain, and it actually breaks the addiction cycle, because in a sense, what we're doing with mindfulness and meditation practice is we're reclaiming our ability to choose, because we're becoming aware of our choices again. And so those would be like the four kind of core principles that I start with most couples and most people.
We'll be right back after this brief message. And we're back. Let's dive right in.
Man, I love those. And I echoed those. I'm just sitting here nodding my head. Be huge fan of mindfulness, slowing down, being aware and in the moment, catching yourself, kind of gently bringing yourself back, that whole trigger behavior reward type of, okay, how do I break this cycle that I'm in? You mentioned a spouse or partner being a supportive system about, they're entitled to their own feelings, right? And how their responses. Do you have other suggestions? I know some of our listeners are probably being like, yeah, you know, this is critical. What can I do as a supportive role? Are there things, tips, and even things that they're not helpful, right? That they keep finding themselves doing, and maybe reinforcing that, creating more shame, if that makes sense. Do you have tips for the spouse or partner that's struggling, trying to be a support?
Yeah, you bet. I guess let me qualify this by saying, to a betrayed spouse, it is never your responsibility to fix or maintain or control your partner's recovery or behavior. That's just more pressure for you. It's something that won't yield good results anyway. You'll end up feeling like a probation officer or a mom and or a dad instead of a partner. But with that said, I think that there's got to be this middle ground space where it's okay for you to actually have authentic reactions and responses without actually overdoing those responses inside the marriage. So, you know, like with my wife, like when she found out, she was shattered. I mean, she was devastated for good reason. She could barely breathe. You know, she couldn't, every time I was in the room, she could hardly like think straight for a while, because everything was spinning. Everything was out of control. And so there'd be a tendency because of that for her to maybe go into places where she would either be really highly critical, or she would maybe want to call names, or, you know, so make sure you're being authentic with your emotional experience and then allowing some space and some room for your partner to do the work that they need to do of their own fruition to actually start to rebuild the trust. And then the other thing that I would say is, for a betrayed partner, they often feel, number one, this isn't fair, which it's not. They feel like they shouldn't go get or seek help because their partner's the one with the problem. But the truth is that for most partners, it's so beneficial to still have a few people to reach out to and have a team where there can be education and support and empathy and also a broader perspective. So a good team helps.
Yeah, that's helpful. Let me ask you a follow-up question on that team. Thoughts, recommendations as far as, you know, supportive, is that look like a good friend? Should you recommend that they not, you know, tell everything to their mom or to, you know, sisters or that kind of thing? Or is it, hey, this needs to be open. This is a journey and you need to have that supportive team regardless of who it is.
That's a great question. I would say that recovery sort of demands that I come out of hiding and I come out of the dark, but it doesn't mean they have to be like me or somebody else who's out there speaking it publicly, right? So I actually have four criteria for a good team member. And you can get a good team through a therapist or through a therapy group or maybe a 12-step meeting. Those can be one way to build a team, but the four criteria that I use with my clients to saying, should I disclose or not? Should I bring them into my team? Is number one, are they willing to actually learn about the situation I'm in rather than just jump to conclusions? Are they willing to do some education, read some books, listen to some podcasts? Number two, is this person able to do two things at once, which is offer empathy at the same time they're going to push me for growth? And if they can do both of those things, they're going to be a good team member. The third criteria is, will this person keep my confidences? I don't want to go to the next family party and have my aunts, my uncles, and my cousins all talking to me about my problem when I told my parent that I had this problem, right? And then the last one is that my team members will place a premium on my choice to make my decisions for my situation rather than, you know, attaching their support or their love for me to whether or not I stay or I go in the relationship.
Yeah, man. I love those criteria. It feels right. It rings true. And I think that there's a lot of probably family members, you know, loved ones who are listening to this as well, being like, okay, you know, this is the role I can play, maybe a more supportive role, and not just offer empathy, but encourage the growth. I love that aspect. I think of that second one that you talked about. So great ideas and thoughts about surrounding yourself with that positive team and the criteria for that. Now you mentioned that you act as a guide to support those who embark in the life transformation of living a connected lifestyle. Now, what exactly do you mean by a connected lifestyle?
That's a great question. So, you know, down at the core, all of us, and I think this goes back to your kind of three things here, like we are wired for a connection with other people, right? We don't do very well. We don't survive very well. We actually get sick more if we're not in a safe, committed relationship. So that's part of it. But the way that I look at it from a broader perspective is that I spent most of my life going inward on myself without knowing it from a shameful place. And all it did was make me self-centered. And what we teach is a connection three ways. So there's an ongoing outward reach to something or somebody bigger than ourselves. So I happen to be Christian. I believe for me, that's Jesus Christ. But our clients get the chance to wrestle in an ongoing way. And it's not what they choose that matters. It's the wrestle itself that matters with something bigger, higher principles, a higher power, whatever it is. That's the first one. The second one is, you know, I need connection with other people. And we look at two aspects of that connection. One is empathy. I need to learn how to give and receive empathy because that's where we find our deepest levels of intimacy and connection with people. And then the second part is accountability, where I do better when other people know what I'm choosing to do to work on myself. And then the third part is connection. And we talk about a heart-mind connection, where I'm going to, this is where the mindfulness and meditation practices come back in. I'm going to pursue a life where I understand what's going in my mind and my heart, and then choosing to live from that sort of centered sort of gut place. And then that allows me to live my life on, you know, on life's terms. If I'm having a bad moment, I can trust that I have the tools to do that. I can trust that I'm human. And so connection three ways: higher power, other people, and then self, heart and mind. That's what I mean by a connected lifestyle.
Yeah, man, that's so good. I love this. Thank you for that. Now, you have a podcast called Therapy Brothers podcast, right? Please tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's like a passion project, Dave. You know, it's like the thing that I looked forward to every week. And my brother Brandon is a therapist who actually specializes in the very same kind of area that I do. And we get on podcast together. It's called the Therapy Brothers, and we actually have callers most week. We'll have a caller call in with a specific question as it relates to their relationship in recovery or their betrayal or some form of trauma. And then we just have a three-way discussion for anywhere from 30 to 40 minutes with that caller. And we try to help them and answer their questions. And it's just, it's been so awesome because these people are so incredibly brave. You know, they come on and they're so real. And that's one thing that in my life and in my own recovery process, I've come to put at a premium is just that authenticity. And so we get to see authenticity on a weekly basis with the people who call in. And so it's something that we just really enjoy doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I enjoy doing the podcast as well. I look forward to it on Mondays when we record these podcasts. Is your brother here in town as well? Is he's somewhere else?
He's in Utah County. He's down just a little further south.
Okay. Awesome, man. There cannot be enough. Patrick's doing this great work. We need like 10 more of your brothers scattered everywhere, man. Helping people out. This is awesome. Say, tell us then the best place for listeners to find you and learn more about you and your resources.
Yeah, you bet. So the podcast, therapybros.com. And then also just our practice here, and probably the best way to reach me personally would be through lovestrong.com. And then also if you're on Instagram, it's the.wandering.therapist. So those are the best ways to reach me. But
okay. Awesome. And we'll put those in our show notes as well. Hope that list, I'm guaranteed it's going to grow longer now after this podcast. People are going to be reaching out, because honestly, listeners, I could not recommend Tyler. And if his brother Brandon is anything like Tyler, man, just one of the greatest, not only human beings, but he just knows his stuff. And so highly, highly recommend reaching out with any kind of struggles in this area. Just one of the best in the business. Kate, I've got to ask you, then we ask all of our guests this question, a couple questions. In your mind, what's the key to a stronger marriage connection?
That's a great question. This is maybe a roundabout answer to this, Dave, but in the work that I do and what I've experienced personally, I feel like I came into this world with all of the goods that I already needed. And then I was convinced through life experience that I wasn't enough. And I've since spent the rest of my life uncovering the truth of who I already was. And when you get two people who are willing to do the work of systematically uncovering and embracing the truth of who they are, then it allows two people to bring something to the relationship and offer themselves. And then when you have two people who know who they are and can be vulnerable with one another and they choose to be with one another, that's where the deepest levels of connection happen.
Oh, man. Man, I love it. We speak the same language. All this is just resonating. I'm going to re-listen to the episode and just take down all these notes, man, because this is good stuff, my friend. Okay, another question. Your takeaway of the day. If there's a message of anything that we've talked about, maybe we haven't talked about it, something that you absolutely want our listeners to take away from our discussion today, what would that be?
Yeah, there's, you know, if your listeners are listening and they can relate to any of this, whether they're in the spot of being a betrayed spouse or someone who's struggling with an addiction, First and foremost, what I would say is that I spend my life and my career doing what I do. Sorry, I'm going to get emotional because I've seen and I've tasted and I've felt the hope that comes. And it's not just hope that there's going to be climbing out of this dark hole. It's what this dark hole can produce in your life if you will open your heart to letting it. And I have four daughters, Dave. I've got four daughters. I think we're actually a pretty parallel path. I think your oldest just got married not too long ago. Mine just got married this year too, to a really awesome guy. I got four daughters. I would welcome every one of my daughters to marry a man who is actively working a recovery, because what she'll get is she'll get an honest person who has a heart that won't quit, who knows who they're becoming, who can offer their goodness to the world, and who's not afraid to take the light that they could shine and show it to the world. And so if you're sitting there listening to this feeling like it's hopeless or it's dark, it's not. Your story is not finished. It's just begun, and you're sitting on a gold mine if you're willing to do the work.
Man, that is so powerful. Tyler, thanks for sharing that. We have three daughters and a son. I just echo what you're saying. Yeah, that when they discover, it's the humility, and they go all in and say, I'm willing to put in the work, and that an honest person who is vulnerable, who is humble, and willing to do what it takes to make that relationship matter, to really go all in, and to really understand that people are more important than problems. Yeah, I think that's a powerful lesson. Wow. Again, I wish we could go hours and hours, my friend. We're gonna have to bring you back on because we got a lot more stuff to talk about. We'll bring you and your brother on. We'll have a good time. Tyler, thank you so much for joining us today on this episode. I think a very powerful episode. So thank you so much for making time to share your knowledge, your expertise, and being vulnerable in the things that you've shared today.
Thank you, Dave. It was a treat for me.
All right. Well, that does it for us here at the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast. We sure appreciate you. We'll see you next time. And as Liz, if she was here, she would say, remember, it's the small things, those small changes that create a stronger marriage connection. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, do us a favor and take a few minutes to subscribe to our podcast and the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel, where you can watch this and every episode of the show. When you hit the like button and leave a comment, your feedback helps us improve the show. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend. You can also follow and connect with us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. Be sure to share with us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. If you want even more resources to improve your relationship connection, visit our website at strongermarriage.org. where you'll find free workshops, webinars, relationship surveys, and more. Each episode of Stronger Marriage Connection is hosted and sponsored by the Utah Marriage Commission at Utah State University. Finally, a big thanks to our producers Rex Polanis and Alexis Alcott and the team at Utah State University. And you, our audience, you make this show possible.